Yes, guys, what's good? You're tuned into Manga Masala, Pi Radio South Asian show. My name's Gaines. I'm here with Halima and Simran.
Yay! Hello. When was the last time we were all together? A long time ago.
Like on air like this. Yeah, it's been a long time.
Yeah.
And speaking of on-air mishaps, I forgot we're meant to record an Audacity. So if you two don't mind just like chatting.
Oh, it's the program, I guess. Yeah. We're recording on Audacity.
Can you pass me the mouse, please?
As we have said, it's not a Manga Masala episode without a little technical.
When I'm not on the
on this side. Okay. Anyway, Simran, how are you? Everyone, Simran's very hungover.
Guys, we're streaming live and hungover today.
Because
I went to Warehouse Project last night.
How was it?
So good. I love Disclosure, to be fair. I've seen them 3 times in the last 4 months, and all 3 of them have been in Manchester.
Oh, really? Wait, how come they come to Manchester? Like, Warehouse?
Part Life After Party.
Oh.
And then yesterday, a Warehouse Project.
Nice.
They are really good, to be fair.
I don't think I've like, apart from their really famous songs, yeah. I don't think I've ever listened to Disclosure.
Why nice?
Yeah, back in
2013 era.
And me. Yeah.
Mm.
They do make bangers.
Yeah, they actually do. Latch is a certified. And are they a British?
Yeah, they're brothers. Yeah. They're brothers. If you go through their discography, they've actually got bangers. There's a few in like, a couple of albums of theirs that like they're Latch level bangers.
Yeah.
Like,
oh, really?
They're so good. Yeah.
Wow.
I'm surprised actually that they're not more of a. Because obviously they're a household name, but I think compared to like 2013, they like very much peaked.
I think
with
now
that
they're very much in their DJ bag though. Like I think they said like they very long, and I don't blame them. Like maybe we could talk about this. Like they went through a phase where they refused to play Latch or White Noise, right? Because they knew like in their thing they said they had like. Just girls for the first like few rows, and then those songs will come on and everyone takes their phones out and then for the rest of the set like no one's really vibing
because they don't know anything
so they went through a phase where they stopped playing it, and they got so many complaints from people being like play Latch, play White Noise and then they were trying to go into their like techno bag and try and be more experimental with their sound, and then they put up a video earlier this week, and they're like, don't worry guys, we're going to play Latch this week.
I actually saw a tweet that was semi talking about this, and it was someone with the take that if I'm paying to go and see an artist that has one or two like certified hits that everyone knows, I expect them to play that.
Yeah. Like you would be disappointed if you've gone all that way and they didn't play it.
I do think that is what like
Continue.
Aliases are for, or like a heads up. Like I know, like I think it's Bicep. They have like, or a few like DJs have like another name that they go by, and that's how you know they're gonna do either like their bangers or they're gonna try something more experimental.
What is it? Oh, that's interesting. Yeah, I get
so
it.
So like, if you know you're seeing like, I think it's got like Bicep Chroma, if I'm not mistaken, and then they do like they still play like their big songs, but like, they'll do like a bit more experimental stuff.
Right.
And then you can either you know what to expect basically, so you know you don't have to book the ticket if you.
Yeah.
Only want to listen to
the classics. Yeah.
Yeah, that is a good way of going about it, I suppose.
But yeah, I do get what you
mean. I get it on both sides. I get it from the artist side, and I get it from the.
I would just think like you're doing an hour and a half or whatever set, but for that 3 minutes that Latch is on is when you've got people's attention. It would drive me crazy.
It would make you insane. Yeah, I guess so for them it's kind of like a vetting thing as well. And I guess a lot like with artists who have kind of like a handful of like really big hits, it's kind of hard to get people to really engage with them, like
maybe not so much DJs but like music artists, like singers. TikTok has kind of screwed them over, because I think you have a lot of songs where a 20-30 second snippet of it is famous on TikTok.
So you see everyone
go word for word, bar for bar on 30 seconds of their song, and the rest of the whole show is crickets.
And it's people that come just for the clout of like that song or like that snippet
or something. Yeah.
And then you have people that are saying, oh, like people that are maybe bigger fans of them.
Can't get a ticket. And you're not even like, the weekend, everyone's going Blinding Lights. And I'm like, guys.
Yeah. No, that would probably
different. It's an age thing. But like, there's a clip of like a Brent Faiyaz concert. You know, he has a song, Drop the Roof and Let the Smoke Clear. And it's like the start of the song, he sings one bar of it and then it stops and then he starts again, and like no one knew that because everyone sung it at the wrong time,
because
the
they
song.
All just know the snippet,
you know what I mean,
because
they only know the snippet, not the song, and then literally everyone sings it really loud, like belting, and then it just
I think after I've said this before about how like when I the one time I saw Chaka Khan was at Parklife. Wow. And yeah. obviously that audience only knew, back in 2017. But the only, like, way that the audience knew Ain't Nobody, or the majority of them, was from the remix that had been done, like, the year before.
Oh, my God.
Which skips out the second verse. So, obviously, when she was singing the second verse, everyone started singing the chorus, and I was fuming. I was like, this is the first time I'm seeing Chaka Khan.
No.
And then...
The context here is Carlos is a Chaka Khan super fan, by the way.
I don't know if you remember, but the same thing happened at our wedding. And I was like, you know what? This isn't Parklife. I've got the power. I literally went to the DJ, right? Rewind. And literally rewinded. And I was like, I got the mic. I was like, right, we're going to do that again. There is a second verse. We're going to do it properly.
You should have had a Chaka Khan shrine at your wedding, truthfully.
Are we going out live?
Yeah.
On Pi Radio?
Yes. What do you think we're doing? Like, I'm sorry. Like,
live and direct.
Yeah, it is. Right.
Simon has just been confused a little bit, guys.
Just sat in the Pi Radio studio with the Pi Radio mic. Are we going out on Pi Radio? What do you think we're doing? Right.
I mean, this
kind of goes into the next thing. Hello, Simran. If that is indeed your real name.
Oh my God. Awful time to be a Simran.
Guys, reach out to all the Simrans in your life. Check
on your local Simran.
Because seriously, people need to get a grip.
It's driving me crazy. It shows you what, like, it makes sense that Kirat was that catfish to that degree. It shows you what little internet literacy some people really have.
But I've grown up my whole life knowing a million Simrans. It is such a bait name. It's literally a meme. Do you know what I mean? I am the basic name. It's like the Sarah of like Punjabi names.
I always see the Punjabi TikToks where they're like, oh, girls to like avoid.
And it's always number
top,
one
at
Simran.
At the top of the pyramid, it is Simran. Yeah.
And number two, Kiran, which is my mom's name. But like, it's like, if you want to talk about like a Punjabi girl, you always use the name Simran. It is just like the bland, basic, lovely name, but like, it is just such a basic name, right? I'll admit it.
I would say it's just common.
It's very common. It's a beautiful name, but it's very common. Very common. And so obviously, if you have not seen Sweet Bobby, it's a catfish documentary, and the person who was doing the catfishing was called Simran. The amount, I think I'm at like three people now who have directly asked me if I am Simran from the show, from the incident.
We've had it in our comments, but it's like, do you think we don't have a vetting process either?
Do you think I'm...
if you were actually Simran and you had a show, do you not think we'd be giving you live and direct hot content? Like,
yeah,
we would
do
be, she would
yeah,
be on the hot seat. We would milk it.
Yeah, these guys. You've not seen these guys pimp me out before, but it's been a thing. Simran Randhawa as well. Like, she has the ID tag, which is just Simran. Yeah. So I literally think people are searching Simran.
She's the first name that comes up.
Yeah, she literally must be the first name. Her IG is just Simran, right?
Yeah.
So she's been saying that she's been getting loads of comments of people being like, are you the real Simran from Sweet Bobby? Get a grip.
Oh, she had to put a thing out as well, didn't she?
But are you kidding me? Like, so many people are called Michael, John, Sarah.
No, but that's what I'm saying. Like, now I get how Kirat was actually catfished for that long, because truly people don't have internet literacy like that. Like, they genuinely think they can just go in, type the name. Or maybe it's like a cultural kind of like ignorance. Like, they don't actually understand how popular the name Simran is. Maybe to them it's like the first time they've heard it.
But then I think like it's so
common, I know, but maybe parts of the world where they don't have many Punjabis around, they might think it's a really unique name and they'll find her that way. They must find her. They don't actually understand.
On the internet literacy line as well, aside from Simran, I've seen that the actual, I want to say actor, but in reality, all it is a picture. But obviously, Simran, have you seen the documentary?
No.
Well, basically, it shows the... it shows the profile of Simran, but obviously it's a remade one with just like a profile picture of a like paid actress, model, whatever.
Right.
She's actually really pretty.
Yeah, good on you, Simran. Maybe this is launching your career.
Yeah.
No, actually, everyone, like, she's had to come out and say she's being hounded by people thinking that she's the real Simran.
I don't know why she agreed to that. I don't know what she thought was going to happen.
Maybe it was a bag, though.
But, yeah, it must have been.
Like, I don't understand, like, how... Like, Baby Reindeer came out and then she became famous. I can't remember her name, Fiona?
Yeah, the real woman.
Fiona Harvey. But I think that's maybe because it was the real person actually. It was actually confirmed.
It's inevitable. It's inevitable that people are going to go looking. Like the FBI antics. Because the real Simran has
Martha.
Been.
Yeah, I can't remember.
That the name in the thing was Martha, but I think the person who came forward was Fiona, yeah.
No, but people have found the real Simran, though.
Is it?
Yeah, no, people have seen pictures of her.
So, like, guys, it's not me.
People have found her. But I'm saying that, but there are some people who obviously have tried to find her and failed.
And now they and they've come to our comment section looking for her. Come on. And then shout out Ash BB from The Traitors, because we actually love you. But even she commented, like, happy birthday. Something like, so if you are not the real Simran from Sweet Bobby.
But I think that's because she had seen on like all the people.
She's
like,
with it.
Like,
damn, man.
But it is crazy the amount that people will go to. Like, I think, I've forgotten what the title of it is, but it stars the guy who plays Anwar from Sex Education. It's this like semi-thriller horror movie type thing.
Oh, I've heard of it. I've not watched
it. Yeah, and that it's basically...
What's it called again?
Again, I don't know what called. It's one word.
Yeah.
But basically the plot line is that there's a terrorist attack in London at the same time that this guy is getting a train home. And because he's on the CCTV, everyone assumes that it's him because he's like, he fits the description of a Muslim man with a cap, whatever. And
boring.
But the actual TV show, very scarily realistic in the sense that people literally were able to find him online. Like, it's crazy online. It, like, spread immediately.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
People were able to locate him. Not to give too much away about the actual program if you want to watch it, but, like, it's...
Oh, it's crazy. It's scary. I've seen people, like been found from kind of like the most convoluted clues ever.
Have you seen that Yuval guy on TikTok?
Oh,
he
located
some girl to the exact hotel room.
No, that's
that
that's his thing.
That's his thing, yeah. That's, from like a painting, from the angle of the sunlight.
Oh, and then they have like a long
room.
There's a love story thing going on.
Which is like, on the one hand, okay, that's impressive. On the other hand, what does that say about
it's
like
creepy.
People's capabilities?
It is scary.
Oh, exactly. That's why you should be very careful about what you be posting online, guys.
Yeah, yappa
yeah, and I do think that sometimes I'm like, what if someone, like, especially like on TikTok, you know, obviously we have
they find where we are, they go on that side, don't worry, Carlos, I got you.
They won't be bothered to climb up the stairs.
They wouldn't, they'd get to the bottom, they'd look up, and then just leave.
We're gonna get onto that through the TikTok in a second, but just before we finish on the Sweet Bobby segment, I just wanted to say as well, do you know that actually Keira was having an interview with BBC News and she revealed that someone else has actually come forward that
has been catfished by
Simran.
Yeah,
it's not just that she did it to her, like she has a catfishing problem.
No, but that's what we said. When we spoke about it, we did say like the Netflix show doesn't go into the depth of like the deception. I saw someone on a TikTok like summarise what the podcast was and it is mad. Like she really, really did like spin this huge web.
What do you guys think catfishing, the people that do catfishing, like get out of it?
I think it's like a sense of escapism. I think it might be a power trip to have control over people. Like if they're powerless in their own lives and they're unhappy in their own lives, it's to create this persona to escape their like kind of their sadness and their lack of fulfillment, and then to exert power over other people to make them do things to I think that's what it is. Like
your own cousin.
I think that one is a bit. There is actually a catfish episode where it was.
That's mad.
Someone's cousin.
That one was
you know
quite,
what I'm talking about?
It's quite funny.
It is funny. At the end, she's like, "You never should have called me a fat beep, Kelly Price." It's funny. I say that all the time. That line. But I mean, there must be some kind of like, I know we said it last week, but there must be some kind of like romantic sexual feeling from Simran.
Towards her own cousin.
Oh, there has to be.
This is our hypothetical. We're not saying
mad.
This is confirmed.
But I did hear
like
it did, the documentary allude to the fact that there was like a sexual.
Yeah. No, there was. There has to be. If you're a grown ass woman in a relationship with a grown ass man, it's inevitably going to have some kind of sexual nature to it. Otherwise, you're just
friends.
Like, he's your fiance, as far as she's aware. That's what I'm saying. There must have been some kind of weird, twisted, incestuous. Because also, if you consider the intimacy of talking all day, every single day, falling asleep, like that's not something that you're able to do just
with anyone.
Do you get what I'm saying? Like, there's something there.
What is there to be said? Like, obviously, not victim blaming, but on like a. Like a stand-up girl, like a, you know...
Yeah, we did say.
You guys touched
we did
on
say,
this.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like, not to be, like, mean or nasty, but, like, how long did it go on for? Years, right?
Without a meeting, without
a FaceTime, all these convoluted excuses about, like, I don't know, didn't they get, like, shot or something?
Yeah.
Witness protection.
Crazy, like, years. At what point do you actually just say, like, I'm not with this? Like, there has to be something fishy here.
Yeah, no, for sure, like, there is something to be said about how she was kind of, like, had a hand in her own suffering or whatever, I guess. But you know what we missed out that I've seen someone else speak about, which is actually quite interesting, is like the role of the parents. Like, because in the Netflix documentary, she emphasises the fact that she was so drawn towards Bobby because it was the first time in her life that she felt really loved. She felt, like, desired and all that kind of stuff. And it's like, some of that must come from, like, the parental home. Like, her parents seem nice enough, but, like, I do think as parents that, like, you should have given your daughter a stronger sense of self than for her to like collect crumbs, no loaf, off of this guy on the internet.
Oh my God, this reminds me of a story that came out, I think, this week. A teenage boy in America somewhere just committed suicide.
Yeah.
Because he was chatting with, like, a Game of Thrones
AI. Oh my God,
AI. I don't know if it's Game of Thrones, but some sci-fi character. AI bot that talks as a character. And now the mum is doing a lawsuit, basically. But then a lot of people are saying, like, kind of what Halima just said, like, if your son was in such despair and he had to resort to, like, an AI chatbot.
But again, I don't know, like...
But it just seems... I think it speaks more to, like, the safety of his home environment. He didn't feel like he could speak and he was in such a low point.
But I don't know. I don't think... I think it's questions to be asked, but, like,
I think it's more of a question as hypothesizing
about, like, the home situation of someone that's, like, just lost their child.
I think it's more a question of male loneliness epidemic rather than crazy. Maybe like a bad, like, yeah, that's true. Carlos is right. I don't think we can hypothesize truthfully on that, because someone can have a really loving home. But because of the way that men are socialized in society, that might supersede how much love their parents give them at home, truthfully, because it is very sad. Like,
well, speaking of sad people.
But having said that, though, like, okay, parents do be very careful about what your child is doing, like, just online. And
Jock's making a crackly noise. Sorry. Maybe move it with this.
Sorry.
But yeah, parents. Watch out for what your children are doing.
Speaking of sad people, our TikTok this week.
I must clarify. Guys, every so often we make, because obviously we talk about politics a lot on the show, every so often we'll make a video that will go viral or, like, get kind of clicks and comments for all the wrong reasons. It will end up, because there really is a wrong side of the internet. And our video last week talking about kind of reparations for slavery truthfully ended up on the wrong side of the internet. And you know what's really funny is that when we were having the discussion, we were, like, laughing, we were poking fun, we were, like, looking down on, like, Jacob Rees-Mogg, because we were like, oh my God, how ignorant is he?
How ridiculous.
How absurd.
You lot didn't even go into reparations. You were talking about being lauded for stopping slavery. Yeah. It wasn't even so much about reparations going into detail on that part.
But we were, like, laughing, we were looking down on it, whatever. I thought that everyone else would be on the same page.
I thought.
Listen, guys, I really learned a lesson that day. It wasn't a political lesson. It wasn't a history lesson. I really learned my lesson that day. Like, this kind of thinking, we're in the minority. I thought people were gonna see the sense in what we were saying. I thought they were gonna agree. I thought they'd know where we're coming from. Apparently not. And all of a sudden, all these years of a failing British education system, in my opinion, has really come to rear its head in our comments section. But you know what it is? It's like the amount of ahistoricism is crazy. Like, the big argument that a lot of people are saying is, like, well, I had nothing to do with it. Do you know what I mean? Like, you had nothing to do with it. I had nothing to do with it. Why should I have to blah, 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 blah? Okay, well, then why were the state still paying reparations until less than a decade ago for slave owners? Like, firstly, the idea of reparations is not an alien one. Reparations have been paid throughout history, but it's interesting to see who they've been paid to. Firstly, slave owners in this country. The entire state of Israel has been created as a form of reparation, right? And I'm not going to sit here and, like, condone whatever Israel are doing or whatever, but I'm saying like the Jewish population should have been paid reparations, rightfully so, right? But then why does that stop when it comes to like the descendants of slavery? Why does that kind of thinking suddenly stop? Mm. It's crazy. Why did Germany pay reparations to the Jewish population but not the Namibian population? Their first concentration camps were in Namibia. You know? Like, there's something to be said here, and it's definitely a racialized thing.
I think also because a lot of the comments were saying, actually, we did pay reparations, but then I literally wanted to be like, who?
The slave owners. Not to the actual enslaved people, not to their descendants, to the slave owners. So, like, the question of reparations is not an alien one, first and foremost. Secondly, people don't actually understand the structural continuities of, like, slavery and colonialism. They think because it's ended, that's it, it stops there. They don't understand the fact that white supremacy is still the governing force in the world, and it impacts absolutely everything, even in this country, from education to housing to employment, everything, yeah, like healthcare, everything. And where do you think that comes from? These are all structural continuities of slavery.
It really wasn't that long ago.
It really wasn't.
And I think that's the other thing as well, when people comment saying, oh, so what, like, do people who were slaves under the Roman Empire deserve reparations? Like how far do we go back? Like,
be for real. And also, a lot of arguments that people are making, like, oh, well, we're not the Atlantic slavery wasn't the kind of advent of slavery, and, like, the Africans traded slaves and blah, 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 blah. This is what I mean. You lot don't know your history, and you're saying, I don't know my history. You don't know your history. The Atlantic slave trade was one of the most formative watersheds in the entire world. Yes, there was slavery, there was turfdoms and that kind of stuff all over the world. It was never institutionalized the way that the Atlantic slave trade was. That took things on a whole different level. It created racial sciences. We've never seen any other kind of slave trades do that kind of thing. Like, people don't actually understand what it is that's so different. The fact that you can't compare the Atlantic slave trade to other interregional slavery. Like, they don't get that. Mm. Like, it was the first time we'd seen that kind of mass movement cross-continental in that way. They literally created racial sciences that govern the world today to justify the Atlantic slave trade. The entire concept of white and non-white and black and all of these things came from the Atlantic slave trade. The entire populations of the world were altered by the Atlantic slave trade. The entire Caribbean population were there because of the slave trade. African-Americans are there because of the slave trade. Afro-Latinas are all there because of the slave trade. People don't actually get it. They think it's just the same as, like, you know, people trading within their own villages.
Oh, yeah, girls, that Halima talking that nonsense.
Yeah, okay, that's what I mean. Like,
that's literally one.
You
of the
think
comments.
I don't know? You don't know.
It was just mad. Like, no one even listened to that clip, man.
We weren't talking. It's
weird. No, but you know what was bad?
About the congratulations for ending it. That's all the clip was about, and then slapping Carlos's ass.
Well, yeah. but that was the bad bit. There was one of the comments literally used me as part of their exam. No, as part of their example. Like, well, actually, if you stop slapping Carlos, then I don't expect his descendants to lord your descendants for. And I was just like, that shows that clearly they've listened to the clip and they just don't get it.
Like, TikTok is a bad platform for it because it's not so followers based like Instagram. It really will just gain traction where it's going to gain traction.
But it just goes to show, like, truly, I genuinely do just think it's an absolute failing on, like, the British education system, because people aren't taught this. People aren't taught genuinely, kind of structurally, what slavery is and the continuities that are here to this day. They don't get it.
I wish I could go to school again so I could do, like, history class and actually question things with my right mind. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, we didn't question nothing in school.
Because you didn't know.
You know, it's just curriculum, innit? You just learn it for your GCSEs and that's that.
No.
The less I say, the better.
Well, this seems like a good point to continue with the theme of... Bad Vibes
Island. Did you harmonise?
No, that was when I put the theme over. That's going to be really bad. Moving on.
I thought it was quite good.
Big Brother. So, have any of you been watching it?
No. I never understood Big Brother. Like, I just don't get it.
I do like it, like, when I've seen it. I love reality TV, though.
It's
just people just in the house.
Oh,
and
you know what we
should
talk about
naturally...
one day? Married at First Sight, if anyone's watched
that.
Oh,
I've been seeing clips.
Mayanka watching it.
Yeah. My I've been seeing clips on TikTok, but not watching
Can
the
I
show.
Say my piece?
Yeah, go on.
It's supposed to be, if you've not seen it, people marry a stranger, right? And then you get paired up with a stranger, you meet the other couples, people fall out, people cheat, people argue, you see great relationships, you see very toxic, unhealthy relationships. But these people are supposed to be paired by clinical psychologists based on their strengths and weaknesses, who they are as a person, their values, and what they're looking for in a relationship. They literally put people who are like, I've never wanted kids in my entire life, with someone who is like, I would need to have kids now. Oh, my body clock is ticking. I live for children. I want to be a mother. Like, it's like, oh my God, it was never going to work.
Have you seen people do that, them TikTok skits of like the panel putting people together?
And
it's
then
so funny.
They have a dinner party where everything kicks off, and then they have a commitment ceremony, they call it, where you sit down with these three psychologists doing dirty on the name, man.
You'll be on that one.
And they are so, please, heaven.
You
no.
need to go put it to right.
And they literally, like, they just, like, celebrate like the most horrible, horrific, and they focus on the worst. They just focus on like the most menial, tiny things, and it's like the person's literally abusive, and you're talking about like something that happened 2 weeks.
They don't pick up
their socks. Oh my God, it seriously drives me mental. And there's this like Australian one, and she's like, "So what is it there? What is it?" And then she,
accent, Simran.
It drives me crazy, but I can't stop watching it.
I do love coming across it on TikTok.
But I think that's the same thing with Big Brother when you're saying about not necessarily watching it. It is those memeable moments that are the ones that, like, that year, was it 2016?
Like Gemma Collins,
that year
Tiffany
was just iconic.
It
all
was.
The stuff that came
from
that.
Yeah,
like,
fair.
Yeah. But this, what we're about to talk about, is not necessarily so iconic in any sense. So basically, one of the housemates, Ali, earlier this week, wore a T-shirt that basically showed what is considered on a geographical map the state of Israel, but with a watermelon like over it. I think with the caption "resistance by any means necessary,"
which is clearly a pro-Palestinian kind of sentiment and show of solidarity.
Yeah, she wore that. I believe like the clip actually like came out, and it was like circulating, but then it got taken down because who was it that complained? It was the charity Campaign Against Anti-Semitism said that it had submitted a complaint to Ofcom as the incident represents a serious violation of broadcasting standards. They said that the graphic was anti-Semitic and caused significant distress amongst the British Jewish community, who regard it as a genocidal message. Similar to... I just read that for the first time, right? Similar to the slogan "From the River to the Sea," which calls for the elimination of the world's only Jewish state.
Mad.
The fact that they've used genocidal in...
Like, it just doesn't fail to surprise me. Like, it's just such a victim complex, and we're not, obviously we've seen that there have been rises in anti-Semitism and things like that, but when you conflate it with something so ridiculous, like, you lot actually do have things to be focusing on, not gonna lie. Like, anti-Semitism has risen, actually, and like, that's what you should be focusing on.
Yeah.
That's what you should be tackling, not someone else's expression of their own political belief that is actually against a real life genocide, not a claimed one, not an imagined one. Like, it's but the thing is that is it air on Channel 5?
ITV.
They blurred it out,
yeah,
right?
So they re-uploaded it, and then, and when it aired, I think basically a t-shirt was just black rather than having anything on it. And it's, people are pointed out, like, it's the fact that in this most recent series, they've had people expressing anti-immigrant beliefs, pro-Nigel Farage,
have they?
Misogyny,
oh,
pro-Trump comments, anti-wokeness, all of this has, like, been allowed to air. But when it comes to not a genocidal symbol, an anti-genocidal symbol,
like, right.
That's suddenly a problem.
But this is, like, the second thing in the last, like, 2 weeks that I've seen on like British telly that has done my head in about this. Like, I texted you guys about the segment on this morning.
Oh my god,
I can't remember the guy's name now, Jai or something, and someone else was on the couch with him.
He is insufferable.
I didn't know much about him. I literally only see him through Gogglebox when he's on that, right? So I didn't really know much about what he stands for or anything or like that, right? He's on this morning, and the whole thing was so... I literally thought I was watching, like, I don't know, like some weird piece of like propaganda. Yeah. Like,
well, it is.
It was so...
That is what you were
watching. Yeah, but it felt so dystopian.
Yeah.
And it was so... It did my head in. Mm. I could not actually believe the words that were coming out of his mouth. Like, it was just basically saying about, like, talking about condemning what happened on October 7th. Do you condemn Hamas? The hostages and all this, that. And basically saying, like, the Israeli lives lost, which obviously we're not denying, but, like, huh? Not once were the hospitals, the schools, the refugee tents, the displacement, the bombarding, none of that has been mentioned in Palestine.
We see this all the time, though. Like the privileging of certain lives over others. It like just every wasn't single year once. every single year on 9/11, people will kind of mourn and lament like the 1,000+ lives that were lost. Yeah, absolute tragedy. No one once mentions the millions of lives that were then lost. Like on the subsequent war on terror, innocent civilians, by the way, the exact same kind of principle here. The thing about Big Brother, though, which is like, I mean, firstly, it's a very, very obvious nod to what we have seen time and time again as being a kind of censorship towards pro-Palestinian sentiment. It's not the first time. We've seen people kind of, we've seen people at work kind of be hounded and facing disciplinary action for showing any kind of pro-Palestinian symbols. We've seen, I mean, we spoke about in the show, the bus driver and that incident. Mm. You know, people are literally being harassed for showing any kind of pro-Palestinian sentiment. We've seen festivals and events kind of blacklist Palestinian artists and creatives and whatever. And we've seen extreme cases, like Simran says, of just pure propaganda. The thing about Big Brother, though, right, and Carlos, you said just now that they've allowed all of these other things to run, the anti-immigrant sentiment, the misogyny and all of these things. And as problematic as it is, I do actually think it's all right to air it because it is, it's a real reflection of those people as a microcosm for British society, right? That's exactly the point of a show like Big Brother. Yeah. Is to put a group of people from all kind of aspects, from all demographics of British society into a house to see how they can speak to wider British society, to kind of get to know them, to humanize them, just to kind of really, in a kind of like psychological, scientific way, look at how a group of random people might interact with each other when they're in an enclosed space. And there's a lot that we can learn and see from that, right? So it's not awful that they've let these other things run, because it's a genuine demonstration that there are people in society that think and believe these things, right? So then why is like pro-Palestinian sentiment where you draw the line? Like, we have seen that, like, there are swathes of demographics within the British public that are pro-Palestinian. We've seen, you know, like, we've had protests in London that have numbered plus a million, you know, like, more than a million people. So why, it's not a niche kind of outlying political ideology. It is kind of, I would say, actually, more people are pro-Palestinian than they're not. Right. Mm. Or in some degree sympathetic to the Palestinian cause than they're not. So why is that where you now draw the line? Furthermore, it's so ironic because I don't know if people actually understand where the term Big Brother comes from. It's basically this idea of it's from Huxley's like novel Big 1984. And Big Brother is basically the idea of like, I don't know if you guys know the kind of the panopticon is very, it's from like Foucault's theories of like the state becoming encroaching onto people's like personal spaces. And what,
who's Huxley, sorry,
author?
I thought it was George Orwell.
Oh my god, yeah, it is. Sorry, I said the wrong author. You're right. I was thinking of, what did Huxley write?
Continue.
What I was going to say.
Sorry, I interrupted your flow there.
Yeah, you did, actually.
I really apologise.
The state encroaches on the people.
The state encroaches. Yeah, basically, it comes from a world where there's like cameras everywhere, or whatever, and it's the idea of like Big Brother is watching. So it's kind of like the state kind of really stripping people of their like privacy and like infringing on people's like liberties and freedoms and things like that. And Big Brother, and like they've taken this name and they've turned it into this like kind of ridiculous reality show. But it's really funny because it's like the very thing that the term Big Brother was kind of condemning, which is this idea of like state censorship and state oppression and whatever. It's exactly the same thing that's happening now. Mm. Like the kind of the censorship of any pro-Palestinian sentiment. And it's crazy because it's like what they're doing is they're like suppressing dissent. Like it's not a self-contained event, what happened there. You know, it's a wider attempt to suppress dissent. And we've seen it all throughout media and society and even at the political level, at the government level, where people like Suella Braverman have come forward and been like, yeah, these pro-Palestinian protests, they're full of thugs and whatever. Like, I'm paraphrasing, but like kind of called it violent.
Like,
and
death marches or something.
Yeah, like whatever, that, yeah. Whatever she called it. You know, so it is, intentional, it's deliberate, and it's for a purpose. It's not just like it's not just to satisfy the complaints that they've gotten.
Mm-hmm. I think like what Halima was saying on like there's a lot of people out there who have pro-Palestinian sentiments, like they believe in like free Palestine and stuff like that. Like everyone has seen what's happened over the last year. And feel sympathy for the Palestinian people, right? A lot of people feel that way. So it's crazy to see that it's still being treated like a radical position.
Mm. Mm. You know what it is as well? There's literally a Palestinian Lebanese contestant in there at the moment. And they have actually aired, like, I think, two conversations that he's had where he's actually reflected on how what's going on is impacting his family over there.
Wow.
So it's the fact that they would allow that to air, but then when someone is wearing that T-shirt, suddenly that's a step too far.
But then it's like, if you're not going to, then don't let any T-shirts, clothing, right,
that's it. It's similar to what you were saying about, like, if you, like, I would maybe, I don't know. I think if it's getting to the point where like they're literally promoting hateful views.
Oh yeah, of course, not hateful. Yeah,
but,
yeah.
But like in terms of everyone having different viewpoints that I personally would not have, I get that point. And this is the same as that. So it's like,
so you have to let that there.
It has to be a blanket policy.
There we go. Yeah. Mm. And the fact that it's not, it means something, right? It's not just a coincidence.
Well, it's still not over as well. The fact that they've used the language calling it a like genocidal T-shirt when literally it is anti-genocidal what the T-shirt is saying.
Well, it's that thing, right? It's like a lot of people have said every accusation that comes from like the Israeli machine is actually a confession. You know, so
I feel like I've learned a lot about British media in the last year. None of it's surprising.
Yeah. I think the thing to finally finish on as well is that people have pointed out how this is very much an example of what we're now seeing sort of Palestinian erasure, which is really sad to see as well, because obviously that's kind of what we've seen over the past 100 years over in Palestine in terms of how their like allowed land has got smaller and smaller. And now we see, for example, the censoring of this T-shirt, and also someone's pointed out that this month Netflix has actually removed 19 Palestinian films.
Wow. Sorry, go on.
So they actually they uploaded it as part of this like Palestinian stories section, and they've removed 19 of them. Like, so there's only one left now.
I said before, like, it's not a self-contained thing, right? These have like real life consequences and reverberations, like on a global stage. Like, it's not just the fact that they're responding to, you know, claims of anti-Semitism. It is a deliberate attempt, as Carlos says, of Palestinian erasure. And we see those sentiments, how they now kind of like inform greater political and martial actions, when we see that last week the Israeli National Security Minister literally came forward and spoke at a conference about how the Israelis are gonna take over Gaza. And he literally says verbatim, tell them the best solution for them is to go anywhere else, to leave, like to go to other countries of the world, because we're going to take over Gaza. And they have these like images and graphics at these demonstrations where they literally have mapped out Gaza and they've like renamed it, you know, like with Israeli names. Like, that is, and that's not kind of an outlier, that's not a random civilian, that's kind of like on one, that is literally the National Security Minister of Israel, the Israeli state, coming forward at a massive press conference, doing a public address to the world, saying these things, right? And these are the people that our governments are in collaboration with. Mm. Our governments have actively strong diplomatic ties to that individual. Like, it's at that level. It's that individual. Because he's a security minister. Like, they have a actual diplomatic tie to that one individual. You know, and in a way, when you're doing that kind of business, you're advocating for it. Of course you are, because you're selling arms and you're refusing to condemn what they're doing, all of these things. So you've taken a very clear stance, you know, and as a government, you have to now allow for dissent. And they're not. Mm-hmm. And it is because of the attempt at Palestinian erasure that then trickles up to a kind of institutional level where now they're just being genocided.
Mm. I think it has been, again, I don't want to say like too much echo chamber type stuff, but it has been good to see how many people I've seen on my Twitter personally that have been like, I'm not going to watch this anymore. Like, this
I'm all right with echo chambers. I'm okay with them.
At least you know the people are there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I know what I think. I'm not an idiot. Yeah. I know what I think.
I know my people are good. Like, yeah, the people that I have on social media, they're good people.
I don't want no one playing no devil's advocate to me. I hate that. Yeah, I hate that. Go away from me. Leave. Go away.
Mm. Well, moving on to another Bad Vibes Island segment.
No.
You know what, don't worry.
Guys, I'm like never here.
Well, exactly, but you know what, Simran? I've done this now, so we're going to get through this. And then to end with, we're going to have some.
I keep thinking about it and laughing.
Thinking about what?
The thing.
Oh, yeah, the thing.
Surprise thing. I keep thinking about our dinner. I'm starving.
Yeah, so, are hers good?
I didn't give many. I gave three.
I kind of.
Oh my God, I must have given like 15.
I have to. I haven't put all yours in. Oh. But no, I can't. You can't just be the whole video's you. This will make sense when you see our social. But I added in a few from you because I remembered that you've said it to me. So I'll obviously check.
Really? I'll be surprised. I've been reacting to my own.
I'll check it with you. But I want it to be like on the video. Like, this isn't new.
Okay.
Anyway, we'll see what's coming up with that. Chris Cabot. So earlier this week, the police officer that fatally shot him, I think it was 2 years ago now, was acquitted of murder. And I think this trial has happened. And up until this point, there's been a lot of information regarding Chris Cabot that hasn't been allowed to be publicly shared as not to swerve the jury. And because the fact this police officer has now been acquitted of murder, which is a whole like conversation in itself as to why someone that has fatally shot someone that literally like an unarmed black person, like why did that happen in the first place? That's a whole thing in itself that I don't think we like, what can we say about that?
Well, I think it's really actually, I think there's a lot to be said because the conversations now are being geared towards the fact that Chris Cabot was kind of like a criminal.
Exactly.
And like,
so this is the thing. So like, removing what has come out over the past couple of days, what happened to Chris Cabot, in my opinion, was wrong. He was unarmed and he was fatally shot. I don't see why that has to happen. I don't see why there aren't other means in place. Like, the police officer, I think his defense was that Chris Cabot was ramming the car into police officers trying to escape, and he believed there was a danger to life. But I don't understand, like, if there's a danger to life, why does the solution have to be to end someone else's life?
It doesn't stand up, because at the point at which he was shot, like, it's a very clear description of the fact that he had both hands on the steering wheel. Mm. Like, he was still, the car was off, he had both hands on the steering wheel. So he might have, at that point, like, I think it was, they were involved in a chase or whatever, he was ramming cars. Yeah, cool. He might have been a threat at that point, but, like, at the point at which you shot him, his hands are on the steering wheel, right? And also, it's this, what I find really frustrating is this kind of like retrospective justification of his murder, right? Yeah. It's not to say that he wasn't a criminal. It's not to say that the charges against him might not stand, but they need to go be scrutinized in court. The police do not have the right to enact street justice. They're not mercenaries. They're not vigilantes. They are custodians of the law. And if somebody is a criminal, he needs to be charged in the court. Otherwise, what is the point for them? Mm-hmm. If everybody is allowed to act of their own accord, then law and order just does not exist, right? Yeah. And the annoying thing is as well is that people don't actually understand that the police officer didn't know these things about him at exactly. the time of shooting him.
So for context, the reason why the police went after Chris that night was because he was driving a car that was involved as a getaway car for a shooting in Brixton the night before. And that is all the information that the police officers had.
And that's it. You've done no due diligence. Like, that could have been a rental car. Someone else has now got it. That could have been someone borrowing someone else's car. It could have been a stolen car. You have no idea. It could have been a duplicate plates. You have no idea. There's no due diligence. You've just gone straight into shooting someone. And it is, in my opinion, a form of street justice that should not be allowed. And what people now don't understand is the kind of, like, the wider implications. People aren't able to situate this within the wider context, right? People think that retrospectively, oh, actually, it turned out he was a criminal and he was involved in XYZ. Therefore, it's all right. Cool. What happens next time when it's not a criminal? Because it has happened. It has happened so many times where people have been kind of like mercilessly shot without provocation from police forces, and they've not been criminals and thugs and whatever people are calling Chris Cabo at this point. That's what people don't understand, the implications. As soon as we set a precedent where the police are able to enact this kind of behaviour without authorisation, without provocation, that's it, it's game over. It's a very similar thing that happened with Shamima Begum, where because she is someone who ran away to ISIS, that now all of a sudden justifies the things that were done to her stripping of citizenship. It doesn't justify it. You can try her in court. You don't get to now take this action, because as soon as you do it, it sets a precedent where law and order becomes like secondary, not even secondary, like it's just not in the fray of consideration.
This is the thing that's been so, I wouldn't even say like I've been, I mean, obviously it's made me angry seeing it, but also just really sad to see online. So, like I said, up until this point, there's been information about Chris Cabo that hasn't been allowed to be publicly shared as not to sway the jury. Now that they have made the decision and Officer Blake, I believe his name is, has been acquitted, they've now released all these details that Chris Cabo was actually involved. He had previous convictions and he was involved in a shooting, I think, in August 2022.
Well, but you can tell all of that from a number plate. Be so for real.
But it's also the fact that multiple people have said, even the police, like I've said, there is no way that the police that were doing that would have known that the person driving the car was involved in that, because all they had was the information, oh, it's this car that was used in a getaway shooting. And there's so many people online that are saying, oh, well, he got what he deserved. He was a criminal. He did this. He was clearly a bad un, like, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, someone can be a completely imperfect human, and that doesn't mean that they deserve,
we don't have the death penalty for a reason.
Exactly.
You don't get to enact that. That's exactly my point. Like, you don't get to enact your own street justice. As I keep saying, you are not a vigilante. You are a custodian of the law. Your duty is to be lawful when you're doing your job. It's like your utmost duty as a police officer, truthfully. Yeah. So I don't understand. Like, and this whole kind of retrospective justification of something that is objectively wrong and actually should be illegal. It's because they did the same thing with George Floyd, I remember, because, you know, afterwards they were like, oh, he was a criminal and he stole the $20 bill and blah, 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 blah. Like, he's a dodgy character and all of this stuff. But, like, firstly, no one knew that when he got killed. Secondly, does that mean he should now be suffocated to death?
Literally, like, outside of a court things. Of law. And I don't understand why that's such a hard
thing to grasp.
Yeah, like,
It's because of like the dehumanization of like black people. Absolutely. It's because people don't look at like he's a black man, like he is very like dehumanized and villainized in media, and once again, not to justify his actions elsewhere in his life, but like, I don't think people would be talking the same way if it wasn't a black person.
Yeah, and that's why it's so annoying when people are, oh, it's clearly nothing to do with race. He was clearly like this, that, the other. It's like,
but it's your losses, like, the way you lot are receiving this and perceiving this and talking about this, that's what's got to do with race, you know?
I also think as well, the fact that this police officer that killed Chris is going to be able to return back to their position.
That's personally awful.
I mean, I think personally, in my personal opinion, ACAB, and I also think abolition, but if the police is to stay as it's going to stay,
I don't
understand, like,
in accordance to their argument of reform.
Yeah, as a human, how can you go about, I know it's like maybe within your job description that you're going to be involved in these like really high intense situations, like really traumatic experiences. If I had killed a person, I don't think, like, if, and also the fact that if this shouldn't be a regular thing. So I think if a police officer kills someone, if the police is going to stay as it is, maybe they shouldn't be fired or whatever, if we're going to go by their logic, but they shouldn't be allowed to return
to
this.
At the very least, like, not only did he not get charged for murder, it wasn't even manslaughter. Now he's probably going to be able to return to it. Where is the consequence for something like that? Like, cool, you can debate the grey area as much as you want, but he's not completely innocent. Do you know what I mean? Like, you can debate whether it's murder, whether it's manslaughter, and you can believe that, okay, it was imperfect self-defense, that's why he got off. But, like, he still shouldn't have done what he did. Like, there's just no level of consequence.
You know what's the most annoying thing as well? Is I keep on saying, like, and I believe he said it in the court as well, and all the defense is like, it was a split-second decision you have to make about whether there's a danger to life or whatever. But then I'm like,
You should have better discernment as a police officer.
You should. And also, again, why is it always shoot to kill? Why is there not another way? And also, if we're going to do this whole split-second thing, okay, then Chris ramming the police car was a split-second decision.
Right, exactly.
So,
exactly. But my point is like, if you as a police officer, you're expected to be able to exercise discernment and hold your nerve. You shouldn't be in situations where you make a decision because you've gotten nervous or you've gotten scared. That's the wrong job for you then. Sorry. It's literally in the job description.
Yeah, which is why I think if we're going to, like, ignore this whole, like, argument for abolition or whatever, and things are going to stay the way they are, at the very least, this person should not be returning back to a position where they're carrying arms. If one life
taken... You can't
taken,
be trusted with it. Like, he's shown you that.
Yeah. I don't know.
It's just frustrating. It's really frustrating because you feel like you're pulling out hairs when you're like, wow, this is really how the kind of wider British public, like, just see black people. Just,
it is.
Just
and
as
the fact
inherently
that,
as criminals.
The fact that people can get away with openly tweeting, he got what he deserved. Like, he deserved... Like, how...
Yeah, you don't think he deserved to live in the first place because he's a black man. Like, you're just racist. That's all it is.
Yeah, but that's even in the comments we got on that TikTok the other day. Like, some comments were crazy.
There are really some really, really nasty people out there.
Digital footprint, guys.
Well, you'll be glad to know that there's only one more Bad Vibes Island thing to discuss. This is a short one, though. I don't think there's necessarily that much to reflect on.
Your complaint should go to Keir Starmer, not to us.
Yeah. Well, I mean, specifically on this.
Oh, for God's sake.
Have you seen what Paddington Bear's been up to this week?
Oh, my God, I heard about this.
Paddington Bear has been gifted or given an official UK passport by the Home Office. Look, there he is, receiving his passport.
How lovely.
And it's just like... I just feel like it's so tone deaf amongst... We literally have a crisis where multiple people are dying.
No, as in, like, literally last week, there was a report of a baby who has died crossing the waters.
Exactly.
A child.
And in the same, like, thing, you're going to tweet this whole thing that's like, oh, Paddington Bear, cute, getting his passport, like, immigration can be fun, yeah.
You know,
like,
this is appealing to. It's appealing to, like, heavy, like, royalists, the people that love, like, the Queen jumping out that plane in the Olympics.
It.
Like,
that's it.
People that just
believe
ride
in the Commonwealth,
or die.
Right.
Yeah. Proper.
It's like, exactly that.
They're there for the Jubilees, they're there for the royal weddings, for the birth of the kids. It's proper appealing to that very, very specific demographic of people who just live and die for this, like, whole pomp and just the craziness of the.
Oh, and what it does is it actually sanitizes Britain's immigration, like, policies and politics and kind of like the real life enactment of that. That has led to many people being, like, disenfranchised, being deported, being put in danger and dying, you know?
We've spoken before about, like, the subhumanizing of, like, making everyone seem like they're literally so a different class of human, like, they're so subhuman that we don't even care about them. We're letting them die crossing the waters, letting them die crossing in these boats, right? They're now below a cartoon bear.
Yeah.
And that's all I have to say.
Yeah. And I know it's like, oh, it's just a bit of fun. And yeah, great. It can be a bit of fun. It can be great fun if the reality of the situation wasn't so dire. Mm. You know, we can't have such a kind of great suspension of disbelief to the point where we're enjoying a citizenship ceremony of a fictional bear when there are literally in real time, children dying trying to get to this country. And the British public not having any sympathy for that either.
It's one of those things where, like, what did this add to British culture? What did it add? We had Paddington. He's got about 10 films.
No, but that's
we
why...
We see him every couple of years on TV doing something weird.
Why is he always involved?
That's why I say, like, it's an attempt to sanitize and, like, kind of
but, like,
make palatable...
Add? Without it, everyone's life would have been the same. Like, well, the it wasn't even that interesting.
It kind of, like, undoes, I think, kind of, like, the public harm that the Home Office have caused, right? And it kind of like presents them to be like this fun, cute little entity that's like kind of getting involved with this like cartoon character. And you know, that's what I'm saying. It sanitizes it and it makes it more palatable and it makes people kind of have... It makes them seem friendly. It makes them seem friendly and inviting and welcoming when in actuality, they are the complete opposite.
Oy, oy, oy.
Not a fan.
Well, not a fan.
Hooray, you got through bad vibes.
Yay!
What is it? Oh, guys.
What?
I'm hungover.
Oh, no. Drink your water.
I am.
How very unprofessional, Simbrin, of you to turn up.
You knew this was going to happen.
Official shoot. Hungover.
You knew this was going to happen.
Yeah.
Oh, you had ample warning.
Thank you for showing up.
You had ample warning.
Anyway, I saw a tweet earlier this week that kind of really made me, like, deep it and, like, wow, like, actually really, like, relate to this.
Go on.
What?
My toxic trait is that I don't feel any sense of accomplishment after achieving something.
Oh, right, yeah.
Just a mild sense of relief that it's done.
Yeah.
I relate to that so much. Like, I don't think...
Yeah, same.
I can't remember the last time that I, like, completed a task and I felt like... Oh my gosh, yes, I'm so proud of this. This is what it's done. It's always just, oh, that's done. Right, on to the next thing I need to do. Or like,
I can't relate. Celebrate me.
Really? See, I am someone who loves to be celebrated, but I do, like, I never really think... But you know what? I think mine is because I never do things to the best of my ability. Like, everything is rushed until the last minute and for the purpose of getting it done rather than, like, oh, I'm going to showcase what I'm capable of.
I love yapping. Like, I love, like... Someone told me the other day that I don't talk about my masters enough and I just feel like I'm just going to start talking about my masters more.
Well, you should.
Right? I just feel like... I love being able to tell people, like, I did this, I did this, I did this, I have this. Oh, and by the way, a little another nugget of information about me, I did this. You know what I mean? I love that.
Self-promotion.
There's a girl on TikTok, she did a PhD and she threw herself a party, hired
like a
manor house.
Oh, I saw
that,
like a wedding-style party.
It was like a wedding reception, but just for her, I love that.
I saw that was good.
I love the idea of, like, not being humble if you've genuinely done 100. Good. Like, a PhD is, that's
yeah.
insane.
Yeah, yeah,
a massive achievement. Like, celebrate. We're so taught, especially as women, to...
Yeah.
Dull down our achievements.
To be humble,
to make it
brag.
About other people. Yeah. It's not self-serving. It's a very humble achievement with lots of humility and shrouded in just being grateful for the opportunity and whatever, what have you, right? No! Celebrate yourself. Throw a party.
I don't have time. Like, there's always something
I think for me it's...
It is. I mean, that's capitalism. It's on to the next, isn't it?
But no, I think it's immigrant parents, trauma. That's what I'm good. Like,
oh,
for me, that's
oh,
what
that's
it is.
A whole other conversation.
Because, like, as I'm very much, guys, I am, like, the archetype. I'm, like, the older sister of an immigrant family on, like, steroids. And people who know that archetype will know that whatever you do is never good enough. Yeah. And your parents are never really proud
this
of you.
This is always
and,
on
like,
to the next thing as
it's
well.
It's always,
like...
it's just, you should have done it this way, you should have done it that way, you should have done this, you should have done that, you should have got blah, blah, blah. You know, like, they just never are. So I also just have never really, because of that, I feel it compromises the sense of accomplishments that I feel.
Yeah, like, to this day, one of the biggest arguments me and mum have ever had is when I got a B in my ACT GCSE.
You get.
I got screamed at because we did it a year early, so it's the only GCSE I had that year, and that's obviously she wanted me to get an A because it's the only one. Okay, I get it. But
the way that woman screamed at me.
Like, if you've got a B, you got to accept it.
It's a B. You've
got to accept it. It's a good B. grade. Mm. It's a good grade. You've got to tell your child you worked hard. I'm proud of you.
No, I got bonked.
I mean, I don't know if you can say that, but yeah, but apologies.
She got shouted at.
I got shouted badly.
No, but that's. But I think that also has really impacted kind of me celebrating, because I've never felt like anything. This is quite deep, but I just have also. But I do internalize that as well, because I am also, like I said, aware of the fact that I never really worked to the best of my ability.
Yeah.
I just always just rush things to get it done.
I think it is as well, like, down to like parenting. Because I will say, other than that GCSE situation, my mum very much bigs me up a lot.
That's good.
Very
that's
much. Nice. So I feel like she yaps about it to me, so I yap about it to other people.
Yeah. Mm. She learned a lesson.
Yeah.
Yeah. To be fair, like, yeah, maybe that is why you feel that way so strongly, someone, is because, like,
your parents give you that sense. Yeah.
I've spoken to you guys about this, about how, like, where I'm from was very academically competitive and very, like, career competitive. Oh my god, it's all about your grades, all about what you're taking, what subjects, what Russell Group university you're going. If it's not Russell Group, it's not in the question. It was so, like, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, brutal.
Mm.
Cutthroat.
Yeah, cutthroat. Yeah. Like, it was ridiculous. Like, for the point, that time when I wasn't going to go to a Russell Group university, I was, like, not even worth the dirt on people's shoe. Luckily, I did go to one. But it was just, it was crazy. And even the one I did go to wasn't good enough.
Yeah,
crazy.
It's always like that. But that's a very Asian community thing as well, yeah, though. Like, my son's going to be this, my son's going to be that.
It's always been, you know, go to your Russell Group uni, get your 2-1 or your first.
Become a doctor, a lawyer, an engineer, otherwise you're not worth anything.
Like, it has to literally, and then you meet the big four people. Mm. Do you know what I mean? As someone who's been in that, weren't for me, mate. But it's all about accolades and what you can say to other people and what you look like on paper.
Yeah. Whereas I feel like I really, like, I don't know, I feel like obviously I've got one brown parent, one white parent, but I feel like I never really, I was like pushed and really encouraged to do this, that, the other in terms of extracurriculars and academics and whatever.
Mm.
But I feel like neither one of them was really ever kind of like a well done, so let's celebrate this.
Maybe it makes an impact,
yeah,
right?
Maybe that's why I, like, now, like, yeah, I just I don't, I feel like I'm never.
It's just what's expected.
I actively feel uncomfortable when people are like, guys. Oh, you actually did really
okay,
well.
So I'll do it for you guys. You guys are great.
Because for me, I'm like, well, what do you mean? Like, it's just what's expected. I've not done anything special. I've just done it.
Oh, that really makes me sad, guys. Well, I think you guys should work on it for the next year.
But there's a part of me that's also like, wow, you're congratulating me for this. See, when I put my brain to use, that's when you should congratulate me. Because I've never actually tried hard in anything, guys. Which is another conversation.
But that's also a flex in itself, to be honest.
No, it's not.
Considering
good.
What you have achieved.
It's not good. You don't have any sense of accomplishment. And you actually lack purpose.
I can't help you there.
You end up lacking purpose in life. So, guys, work hard in the things that you do.
Moving on. Have you guys seen a TikTok that's been circulating recently of a woman who's involved in sex work?
Yes. Huh?
So I think this is a very interesting kind of area. So
Carlos will tell you.
Is this on a podcast?
No.
I don't think this one.
There's a few
about.
That I know which one you're talking about.
I know
about.
There's
one. A different
one. Kate Moss's half sister's podcast. No, and she had somebody on there.
No, there's another one of a woman who basically slept with 100 men over a 14-hour period.
So it's 101 men throughout a day, basically.
And she filmed herself before and afterwards.
And it was like not during, but like throughout the day kind of thing. So it's basically like day in the life. Day in the life, like, and it starts off with her, like, just, like, waking up, having a shower, having her, like, breakfast, and she's like, right, ready to go, oh, I've just done this group session with these people, that people, and it's like, at the end, she is very much like, oh, like, on the day after, she's like, oh, the aftermath is, I am actually, like, quite, like,
in
so,
pain.
Like, this is, like, that, but, like, and but it's, like, for the whole thing, it's so, like, normalized that it is very much like, oh, like, come with me while this is what it's like to get run through by 100 guys and like, no,
oh,
she literally says
the
that
way,
like,
yeah. Sorry, I'm not laughing, I'm just, the way it was phrased caught me off guard.
No, that's what she says, like, this is what it's like to get run through by 100 guys.
You have to it is for kind of, it is outrage clicks. I think she knows what she's doing, and I think she's doing it for kind of this idea of like stimulating interest and clicks and discussion and whatever, and lo and behold, we've bitten.
No, she is probably like secure in the bag ultimately.
Yeah.
But, and I think
the comment is, what kind of society allows something like this, or what kind of society drives a person to take that kind of action? Because you know what, we are obviously like a sex positive podcast, and we support, you know, we support the rights of sex workers and the autonomy of women and their bodies and all of these things. But that is a very extreme case. Yeah. Like 101 men in the space of like 40, even like physically, that's not good for you. That's not healthy for you. Oh my God. So you have to put yourself in a compromising position to do these things, right? And it's like, what has driven you to that? You know, what kind of society kind of creates an economy of interest for that kind of thing and then actually pays out? Like, she's really cashed in.
There was someone else as well who did OnlyFans for like 3 years just announced her retirement. She made like 35 million.
Lily Allen recently
did a tweet. I saw this on her feet.
She's got a feet thing, OnlyFans. And someone tweeted, like, imagine being one of, you know, the great, like, a great British pop star.
And
this is what you're doing. And she replied saying, imagine being a great pop star, having this many million views on Spotify and still making more money selling feet pics.
Mad.
I saw, is it Corinna Kopp, I think her name is. I saw that. I think she made like 67 million.
Stupid amount of money. 3 years or something. Like, now she's retired.
Yeah. It's just like, but this is the thing. It's like, you, on the one hand, it's like, fair enough, respect the grind, get the bag, whatever. But then I think it is like extremes like this, where it's feel like it's, the thing is, I'm trying to compare it in my head to like, okay, say if someone was doing like some kind of other work for an intense period and you would have a problem with that. But also it is like, I don't think you can necessarily compare, because ultimately it's like...
Yeah, it's your body. Yeah. It's sex and it's intimate and it's obviously taken a physical toll on her since she was saying she saw and stuff. I think the discussion, in my opinion, the discussion we're having right now is valid, right? What is not valid is the fake caring in comments, or the fake comments that people are making being like, fatherless behavior, fatherless activity. That's what I saw in the Corinna Kopp comments about that, like, so fatherless, so this, that, or like trying to be like, what's traumatized her? You don't care what's traumatized her. You just want to make your misogynist comment and leave. Do you know what I mean? Then you're going to go on with your day.
Someone else pointed out the fact that when people were critiquing this person that slept with 101 men in a day, they were like, why is no one like questioning about the men that wanted to be part of this?
I agree. Someone were like, because obviously the comments were like saying awful things about her. And then someone was like, actually spin on its head. Like, I think it's embarrassing and shameful for the men. Which, actually, that reminds me of...
Yeah, I know what you're going to say, and I can't even talk about it.
Yeah, like, you know I can't remember her name. The French woman. Pellicott. But she came forward and she said a quote that I was like, this woman is made of something else. Mm. To go through what she went through, to waive her right to anonymity, to make a point about misogyny, about sexual abuse.
They watched the videos in court.
Domestic violence. She has allowed all of that to make a point, right? To kind of try to stir some kind of societal change. And she came forward and she said a quote where she said, shame must change sides. And I was like,
she is like, I saw something about like, don't force her to be an icon. It's gonna happen as it is. Just like, give her space. Like, just let her do what she needs to do. Everyone is being like, what a feminist hero and icon, which I'm not saying she's not. Of course she's like, she's obviously changed it. She's gone through something absolutely unimaginable though.
But that's, but my thing is like, that's why I say she's superhuman, because onus isn't on her to come forward and teach a lesson, to say these things. Exactly. The onus isn't on her to allow the world to see and know what happened
it's
to her.
My heart.
She and the vast majority of women, I can't say that they would, because it is an absolutely horrific thing. And like, in that space, your most important kind of duty is to yourself and to look after yourself, right?
Oh,
she's continued to put herself at the altar and like, altar of sacrifice, and be like, you know what, like, because I'm sure she's having to withstand equally a lot of negative comments, right? And she's allowed herself to do that, and she said this one quote where she said, shame must change sides, and I thought,
and it
wow,
absolutely must,
wow. I thought, it's so simple, but like, I'm like, you're so, and we never think of it that way. We never do like anything to do with any kind of misuse of power or abuse in kind of heterosexual relationships from men to women. I was having this conversation with my friend the other day where I was like, when women are in, and this is like obviously a smaller kind of example, but when women are in relationships, right, and they get cheated on or the relationship doesn't work, they don't say it because they feel embarrassed. Mm. And it's like women are always taught to internalize the shame of a man's abuse towards them, whether that is being cheated on, a failed relationship, or being abused to that degree.
It's because it's always about what didn't you fulfill? Why weren't you a good enough girlfriend or wife? Why weren't you a good enough partner? Because we've been taught that from birth.
Yeah. But as what's her name again?
Giselle Pellicott.
Giselle, as she said, shame must change sides, and it is not up to the women anymore to internalize the kind of shame that surrounds these, and it's up to the men to actually, what you did was shameful, and what you did was disgusting, and what you did was depraved, and it's not a reflection on the women; it's a reflection on the man doing those things.
Retweet.
But yeah.
Right, moving on to the next tweet that I saw that I thought was quite interesting.
Well, I'm going through your Twitter.
Yeah,
feed.
Yeah, literally.
I like how no one calls it X. You know that.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I never will.
Nah.
It is sad though to see how many people like. I mean, Simran, you've never been like a fan of it, but Twitter used to be like my favorite platform.
My life got better when I deleted Twitter. Genuinely. Mm.
But yeah, it's gone.
Twitter really.
Well, I don't mind. Well, I don't really use it like that. But
Twitter really showed me like the butthole of the internet. Like you could see the most happiest.
You're right.
Saves dog from drowning. People in the comments are arguing between themselves about something crazy. I'm like, oh my God, you guys are so miserable. Get off the internet.
I like it because I get a lot of news.
I like the memes.
It keeps me updated.
But everything gets spun and slapped on its head and everything becomes negative and it really annoys me. That's why I don't look at Instagram comments anymore either. I'm over
You do have to have a level of willful ignorance. Like you do have to have a level of, I'm just going to scroll past this and not.
Hence why I just deleted it.
Yeah, fairs.
Over it.
Well, this tweet that I saw, be interesting to get your takes on it. Cheating once does not make you a cheater.
What?
No.
Oh, okay. The label and the action.
Yeah. So if you cheat once, that does not make you a cheater.
I get the logic behind it. I get it, because it's like the cheating is the action, the cheater is the label. Does someone get to be called a label if they do something just once? Because labels are given as a result of patterns of behaviours.
But I suppose there's the thing of like, there's a once a cheater, always a cheater. Like if you've done it once, then like.
But this actually goes into how sympathetic we are towards cheating.
Cheating's way too normalised. Let's be honest. It's actually normalised to the point that it's nearly expected.
I've seen actually a lot of people. There was another tweet circling Twitter this week that like a viral one that was like, if you guys want to have a marriage that lasts 40, 50, 60 years, you're going to have to forgive cheating.
Madness.
And it's like, please.
I don't know. I don't think so.
Please. What? Please, I beg. I beg. Like, miss me with that.
I saw a lot on Twitter like, when I had Twitter, about how cheating is so normal and it's just expected and it happens in every single relationship. Tweets like that, like, I just, what the hell?
But that's why it is normalised, is because men feel that there's a... Okay, not just men that cheat, but I do think, in my opinion, it is more men. And the reason why is because men are socialised to believe that they aren't suited towards monogamy, that they are have higher sex drives, that they find it harder to control their sexual impulses.
I'm going to be sick.
These are real social myths that kind of have masqueraded
as from men, and it makes me sick.
Well, that's my point, right? Because they're socialized in that way, somehow they believe to a degree like it is normal, or other men do it, and like it's inevitable.
Biological right, and that somehow
that's it,
is embedded and programmed into them. Therefore, it must be enacted upon.
Like, it's a compulsion, not a decision. That's how a lot of men treat cheating.
But like, it just comes down to respect for women if you're in a heterosexual relationship. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
The thing is, as well, though, like. As, like...
A man.
Yeah.
Be quiet. Yeah. I'm joking.
Like, growing up and stuff, like, obviously, you have the whole, like, kind of culture amongst school of, like, kind of getting with people and stuff like that. Like, not that you guys would know, obviously. Obviously, there was the whole thing of, like, this person kissed that one. And, like, even, like, throughout into my early adulthood, I was always someone who, due to, like, my own kind of, like, social awkwardness and insecurity, I found it very hard to get to the stage where you were actually like gonna get with someone. Like personally, right. Like I would never like.
You didn't get none, is what he's saying.
Let's just say I can count the number of women that I've kissed on one hand.
Aww.
But
you also found Bianca very
early on. And like, obviously I'm like, I'm not like complaining or anything about, but what I am saying is,
you imagine Bianca has an easy life. My God.
But what I am saying is that I did used to beat myself up about it, about like feeling like, oh, I'd see like all like, especially going to an old boys school, it was always kind of like, oh, this person got with that person.
Oh, guys, I've people got a really funny story.
People getting up with each other all the time, whatever. And I was just kind of like, why am I finding that so difficult? Like, why? Because there is like a kind of like, I think literally now I kind of understand like what you would need to do having actually been with a woman for like 8 years. Like, I understand, like, I understand what you would need to do. But my point is, at the end of all this, is that there is a lot of effort that is required in order for you to go and bottom of the barrel kiss someone else.
Brother, facts.
Like you have to put in the effort. Like you have
that's
to do
why
that.
I don't, that's and this why is why, I don't yeah, and this, when people are like, I was steaming
right.
drunk. Like
what
like,
he was saying is that
there is steps to it. It's a process.
That's how I get it.
What do you mean you can be so drunk but you've just kissed someone? You're like, oh my God, I just cheated. How? What?
Yeah.
It's so like you have to like.
You don't just fall into someone's
don't
pants.
It doesn't happen. Yeah.
You know, like as
and you go out. I think if that happens, you get drunk and you kiss someone. You've gone out with a little bit of an inkling in your head.
I think it's that we have a society that's really lacking in that integrity. I feel like integrity as a value, as an ethic, as a code of conduct is not emphasized enough in the society that we live in, and that actually there's a lot of degeneracy, in my opinion. I'm just going to call it that. And I think people don't value integrity. I think that people don't value being a person of their word, standing by their words, acting right, you know, like. I think that's the crisis of integrity.
But it's so lauded. And I've said this before, like, dating, modern day dating is a minefield. Like, it is so men against women if you're heterosexual. Like, it is such a game. It's so, like, it's quite toxic. Like, it's very much like you're trialing it all out with each other. You don't know who they're talking to. You might be talking to other people. None of it's wholesome anymore. It's not like, these are my intentions, straight up. I want to date one person at a time. Do you respect that? Like, it's no one, it's all mind games, it's all just like secrecy, and it's just, it's horrible, it's
to,
awful.
And to that degree as well, like then cheating actually is in some circles seen as like a mark of your masculinity and a mark of your manhood. The
but
fact
it's
that
lauded.
You're able to
men
get
are lauded for it.
Yeah, the fact that you're able to get like this many
women
is somehow.
Because
like,
I remember watching like Geordie Shore when I was like 13, 14, maybe too young to watch that, but like, I was really young. Watching like, Geordie Shore, they were all cheating, all the men, and they would literally just like walk around like proper, like, and they would really like brag about it. And
sorry,
it was,
go on. In my opinion, everyone just needs God. You need God because adultery is a sin for a reason, guys. Find God.
I will say, I think for some people, not all, for very few people, there is a redemption arc that can be had after.
Absolutely. Well, yeah,
I think people
it.
Can change. I
this
think people can
yeah,
be
I
in
agree.
Awful relationships where things are just, people are in a horrible situation. Maybe things aren't black and white. I don't know. Okay, I'm just saying things. I think there is the redemption arc that can be had.
I do agree with that. I don't think, like, you know, we've spoken before, if we're going to be abolitionists, we have to believe in rehabilitation. Like, we have to. And that's on an interpersonal level as well. And if you're going to be a Muslim, you have to believe in forgiveness, because that's exactly what God preaches. So, and that's not like blind forgiveness. I'm not saying accept it. I'm not saying normalize it. But I do think that people can make mistakes and learn from them. I don't necessarily agree once a cheater, always a cheater. Because I've seen and heard of relationships where people, like someone has cheated, they've learned from that and they're like happily married, they've got kids, they've you know what I mean. Like
I will say one thing that I've not, that has never failed me, like I've seen in the past with other people, is like if your relationship starts from the one person cheating on their partner with you, your relationship will end with cheating.
You'll lose them how you get them.
You will lose, that's it. You will lose them how you get them.
Agreed.
Yeah.
You know what?
That's never failed me, that logic. I've seen it happen time and time again.
I agree.
Potentially agree with that, but then
Camilla
do,
and Charles.
Well, no, but I do also know of like a like person whose like parents, like they are.
So do I.
Is it the same person?
Really good friends.
They're probably
no.
not.
No,
but
no,
like,
no.
It's like
one of my really
and,
good
like,
friends.
They're still together, going strong, whatever.
Mad.
Yeah, you're right. I never
that
thought
you know,
of that.
That
I
you
never
know
thought
of.
That.
True.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
You never know.
But I just don't think it's a good fertile bed for a healthy and
I don't think it's a good start.
Guys, yeah, can I tell you a funny story? You know what Carlos, you was talking about? Like, oh, I never got any when I was younger. So my sister, I've said, my sister's obviously getting married. So
yeah,
her...
Simran, did you miss this?
Your sister's getting married. Oh, my sister's getting married.
Which one?
Simran, why are you not listening back to every single episode of Mango Masala?
On your drive. What are you doing? Playing back our episodes. Anyway, so my sister's getting married. Like her, and she, my sister's like a very, very beautiful girl. Like she's very conventionally attractive. She gets tons of attention from like all kinds of people. And her fiance is like, he's cute. He's a nice guy. He's a lovely guy. He doesn't get that much attention. They have a really, really great dynamic, though, where, like, you know how, like, men get really insecure about their girl getting attention and stuff like that? He will, like, pimp her out. He'll send her to the garage and be like, go flirt with the guy. They'll, like, reduce your price, you know? Like, yeah, like, he...
I love it.
He's very, very secure. He never feels threatened. And conversely, my sister... So, as I said, she gets a lot of attention. He doesn't get as much attention. And I remember there was an instance where someone was, like, hitting on him, like, quite audaciously. And I think...
Hitting on him?
Flirting with him, making moves on him, whatever. And any other woman in that situation would be, like, jealous, right? I would be. I would not be having it. I would storm in, I'd make a scene, whatever. I would. My sister was like, yeah, let him have it. Because I thought it was really nice, actually, because he feels insecure that people don't really find him attractive. And I thought it was quite good. I liked that.
That's healthy.
Like, these lot be, like, celebrate. Like, she was like, yeah, I just thought it was good for his self-esteem. I was quite glad, actually. I don't feel jealous at all.
Oh my God, I can tell you guys a story. It happened a long time ago.
Cool.
Wait, I was going to say something about what you just said as well, though. I can't remember. Oh, don't bag a baddie if you can't handle
That's because I'm sorry, I'm just going to spill my family's business. My cousin recently, she's like a stunning girl. Like, she's hot. She gets a lot of attention. And she got with a guy who was like just trying to dim her light. Like, I've just seen it. Like, trying to shrink her, trying to make her small. And she was fighting with him one day. And she literally said on the phone, she goes, if you were magnetic like I am, you would understand why people are drawn to you. But you're not, so you don't get it. I was like, tell him.
I'm not being funny. Like, so many men get with a girl who is so, like, conventionally attractive, is going to get attention from out
of
and
that.
But then they try and dim it and they try and squish her.
Right, I hate that.
Don't bag about it if you can't handle the fact that she's going to get attention. She's going to get pretty privileged. She's going to get, like, you know, certain things and certain, like... Oh, I just don't like it. Like, don't now try and squish her down and dim her confidence.
That's it. Because,
like,
you were attracted to her because of those things, right?
Uplift
that's who she
her,
is.
Uplift her. You be a good
And if
boyfriend.
You're secure, like, that's going to make your relationship stronger. Like, if you trust her, that's going
to
make
it stronger. If you actually give her the freedom, she'll want to come back to you and, like, be loyal. And, like,
100.
If you put so much restraint on it and tell her what she can and can't do.
And you're controlling, that's going to push her away.
Awful. Praying for girls in relationships like that. May that type of love never find me.
Anyway, miss me with it.
Seems like a good point to end the episode anyway.
To go and eat, yes.
Well, to go and film our exciting content.
Oh, and then eat.
But also Halima, I wanted to discuss your thing that you posted in the chat earlier. The camera's not working, but
should I post?
You posted in the chat about that tweet, but then it's actually got deleted since, so we can't.
It was funny.
Yeah. Do you want to explain?
It was basically, I think they must have had some kind of like large NHS kind of like company wide meeting, something, I don't know, and they had like a suggestions box basically of making money, and like people were literally putting the most ridiculous, like, someone was like, coin machines make a lot of money, so why don't we just put loads of coin machines in the NHS, like basically turn into a casino. That was an earnest suggestion, though.
It's the same people that were like on the Jay Slater thing.
Yeah, oh my god,
can someone play electronic music and draw him out?
Yeah, oh my god, people are so funny. It's funnier when it's earnest than when they're joking, like, but yeah, it was hilarious.
My favourite one, though, was the one was like, I've got a solution, just get rid of the UK.
Just delete it. And then someone was like, why don't we just go and take over France? They were like, France has loads of medical supplies. We could use them. Let's just go and occupy France. That's hilarious.
Dearie me. But, yeah. Does anyone have...
Serve the NHS.
Yeah. Does anyone have any final comments to add before we round up today's episode?
Thanks for tuning in, everyone.
I went to Cheetham Hill.
You did go to Cheetham. Yeah, you thought, why?
On my way to Heaton Park. I'm such a manny babe. I'm such a manny babe. I had a gilet on. I had Nike socks tucked into on my leggings on my Air Forces. My hair was slipped back. I had a headband.
Clean girl aesthetic.
Clean girl.
Wow.
Molly May.
Happy for you. Now you just need to find a flat and permanently move.
Why don't you? You're literally in between.
When I get a job, maybe. Why don't you get a job here and then move?
I need to look for. I don't want to look for a job yet.
When you're ready to.
Yeah, maybe.
Why don't you move here?
Yeah.
But honestly, God forbid I become a corporate babe again. Like, I just thought that was not the life.
No, but you
for
have
me.
A plan, though. Like, you
if it's an NHS job, then. Yeah.
My cousin worked, the one who messaged me, she works for the NHS.
Right.
Yeah?
Oh.
She does ADHD and autism diagnosis.
Right, I'm going to talk to her.
Yeah, you should. She goes to, like, people's, like, when they need, like, a verdict, she, like, goes to their schools and, like, watches them and.
Does she do free consultations?
Yeah, you could talk. She now that she does this job, she's like, everyone is autistic. She's like, everyone. Because it really is a spectrum.
Yeah,
and she's everyone
it
has
really is.
A little satin, like.
A little sprinkle.
Some of
a
us little more sprinkle. Than others.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah. Yeah. But you could, I'll give you a number if you want.
I've got superpowers, to be honest. I've got good superpowers when it comes to stuff like that. I feel like.
You could tell.
Yeah.
Oh.
But I have, like, this thing where, like, I think I've told you guys before, like, I am a psychologist. I just, my brain needs to lock in for the PhD. You know what I mean? Like, my brain needs to get the grades. But in my soul and in my heart, like, I wish I could go to an interview and be like, just trust me.
in it.
In my soul, it's me.
I know I'm can do it. Yeah.
I can do it. Maybe my qualifications on paper are not there, but please.
What do you mean they are?
They are, but like.
You got to do a little extra.
You know what
yeah.
I mean? Like, I just feel like, just look at me. Just trust me.
Yeah, yeah,
You get the vibe.
I hear it.
Because I went through a phase for a few years where people would genuinely come to me on the street and start telling me their trauma.
What? Without you even asking?
Yeah. I mean, on a train, on public
there
transport.
There are some people like
on
that.
A
my
once
sister's
on a
like
rooftop.
That.
The worst one for me was on a rooftop in Barcelona. Just me and this, like, 50-year-old man until, like, 1 in the morning. It was really strange. But it was really nice.
That
it was very like, earnest.
That cousin I told you about, she's exactly like that.
Yeah.
But she's the one who would be, like, she'll be asking. She asks people the most, like, deepest, darkest
questions. I get going, but they come to me first. Yeah. That's the point. Once it was a child and a little autistic girl. Oh, my God, that was the most sweetest moment of my life. It was insane. I have superpowers. Then I think the universe gave me a break and it hasn't happened for a little while. I'm trying to win
you
it
need
back though.
Because you corporate.
I think the thing I think COVID. Yes. And I think COVID is why people don't really talk too much anymore.
Yeah.
But I'm trying to win it back.
You need
but
to get back
when
on
I
it.
Start going to interviews, I just want to be like.
I know you know.
Yeah.
I know you know. Oh, I wish it was like that.
Innit? Just trust me.
On that note, thank you everyone for tuning into today's episode. Do you want to speak it out?
Oh, guys, I went to Seville last week.
Oh, yeah, for your birthday.
Yeah, so nice. Got
Seville
to speak
was
my
really
Espanol.
Nice.
Wow.
Yeah. Seville was really nice. I really enjoyed the city. Nice.
Yeah, very, very gorgeous city. It's beautiful city.
Architecture's amazing.
Yeah, 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 very like, nice.
I don't know what I'm saying.
Very walkable.
Have you not?
No.
It is.
Is it?
It is.
I will say, like, Madrid, Barcelona and stuff, like, the people there are more talkative. Like, they're like, oh, your Spanish is good. How did you learn it? Where are you here from? How long are you here for? What are you here for? Seville was very much just, like, binary conversation.
Oh,
like,
really?
Just like, oh, what do you want to eat? Kind of situation. Didn't really get to practice
I was with
10
of my cousins, so we don't really speak to anyone else.
But it was so nice. Such a nice city.
It is gorgeous.
Great vibes.
Bye. Bye.